Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hi listeners, Matt here. Just a quick note before the podcast to say that the following episode was initially recorded as an exclusive for our Patreon platform. Now, since it's been roughly 2 years since we started Patreon, Rich and I feel sufficient time has passed for those episodes over the coming weeks and months to now be rolled out on iTunes, on Spotify, on Deezer, on Castbox, or anywhere else where you may listen to your podcasts. The recording is from a while back, so please be aware some references are outdated. However, we still believe plenty of goalkeeping goodness remains in order for you to enjoy it just the same. So, yeah, enjoy.
Curran. Richards! Well, he won't see many better saves than that this season. Alex Stepney responding supremely to that shot.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Hello, Matthew.
Hello, Richard.
How are we today?
Good, good. How are you? Fantastic.
Yeah, very, very well. Excited for what is about to come.
I love this. I like when we get a goalkeeper from the past and speak to him about past goalkeeping, but also get his perspective on modern day goalkeeping. You always sense that there's just going to be a bit of angst there, don't you?
Well, do you know what? This interview for me, and for someone just to be really, really honest, and I guess what we wanted to really dig into his mind as to how he sees goalkeeping now, how he sees how goalkeeping's evolved, what's great about what's going on now, and maybe what was great back in the day that perhaps we're not getting enough of now. And I think that this conversation, he's so open. I really, really enjoyed having this conversation with him and understanding his perspective. And it is a fascinating perspective.
It is indeed. And it's worth saying straight from the off as well, we've done the same thing where we focused pretty much on goalkeeping then and goalkeeping now. There is so much more to talk to Alex Stepney about, and that is something that we've already spoken to him about in the sense that we're going to do another interview in the future. There is, you know, all of his time at Manchester United, playing for Millwall in the 60s, the bizarre scenario of a potential move that he was going to have to West Ham. He then went to Chelsea and swiftly off to Manchester United. The 1970 World Cup, the Eusebio save. He played in the States for a bit as well. There's so much more to talk to him about and plenty that we'll get into in part two.
Yeah, absolutely. And do not forget that he, of course, was Manchester City goalkeeper coach too. Look, really, really knowledgeable guy. Fantastic interview.
Shall we get on with it?
Let's do it.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This week's guest is a goalkeeper who, in the space of 5 years, rose from non-league to European Cup winner. He's played in London, Manchester and Dallas. He's been to a World Cup with England. He's a top-scoring stopper and a one-time world record transfer. And, apparently, he makes a mean spag bowl. Big Al, Alex Stepney, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Matt.
Lovely to have you on. Very much looking forward to this. Like we said, we're going to journey through some of your career and talk a bit about goalkeeping then and goalkeeping now. But Richard, please, Your opening questions.
Right. Indeed, we have our quickfire questions to begin. We're going to change the order of these slightly and we'll explain why in a minute. But the first one of those questions is, what was your favourite kit that you ever had?
Your favourite kit? I suppose it was the first kit at United I had, you know, was different. It was obviously the green jersey with number one in the back. There was no names on it. But the red socks, we used to have red socks, which was complete all red socks. So that red, the red socks and the green and white, the white shorts and the green jumper.
Okay, do you know what? Actually, I want to elaborate on this a little bit more because kits, I mean, we see the kits of today. I mean, kits changed a lot even during my time from when I came through towards the end of my career. I mean, yeah. They must have changed significantly during the period that you played, I assume.
Yeah, the only thing was when I first started, because there was no advertising. There was none of that, which you see, that was the problem. Yeah. So, and clubs didn't have the money that they've got now. So there was no change in the shirts or anything like that in those days. But, I mean, into the 70s, you had Admiral come along and companies like that. It's just started to move into the game. And you would have tracksuits, you know, with Admiral on the back and things like that. That was basically it when you went out to warm up before the game. Don't forget, you didn't warm up well before the game. You ran out on the pitch 5 minutes before the game and you had your little warm-up then. There was no warming up on the pitch like you do today.
Yeah, we're going to get into that very shortly, actually, as it goes. The next of the quick-fire questions is, what was your favourite ever save? Not necessarily the most memorable, but your favourite ever save.
Well, I suppose in league football, remember now, it's a difficult one when you played over 800 games. I think the best game I ever had was against Sunderland when we were in the second division away. We drew 0-0. And the manager then, Tommy Docherty, I mean, he didn't praise a lot of things, but just said, well, that's what he gets paid for.
Nice.
It's the standard comment.
That's it. Just, you're there to save shots, absolutely. And the final question, ordinarily this is the first question, but there's a reason that we flipped this round, is we always ask, what was your favourite pair of gloves that you wore, or what gloves do you wear? But of course, during your time, it was slightly different, right?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have any sort of gloves apart from cotton gloves and things like that. We once they got wet, they were useless, really. But no, I mean, I even played when the ball was wet and it was damp. You spat on your fingers and got a bit of mud out the back of the goal and put that on your hands. But the famous gloves, I suppose the glove that really first came out was Ron Springett, who was an England goalkeeper for Golden Banks. And he brought out a pair of gloves which were string, basically string sort of woven, with like pimples of table tennis bats on down the fingers, and they tried that. But once they got wet, they just got too big. And I mean, one game when I played against West Brom, I mean, at halftime I threw them in the skip. Never wore them again. I don't think I ever wore them again.
So Alex, you said that you'd spit on your hands and put mud on your hands.
Yeah.
So you're getting mud out of the goal net and put that on your hands.
Well, yeah, what we used to do was we boots and studs, because you'd be wearing studs if it was wet anyway. You'd make a mark with your boot and spit, and then just get a bit of mud on your hands, and that was it. You know, it made it, I suppose, really, the heat of your hands basically dried it out a bit, but it helped to when you caught the ball, when we used to catch the ball.
Do you know, this is actually, and the fact that you touched on that you are, and you do see so many, obviously saw lots of footage of yourself, and we're going to talk on one or two bits, where the ball does stick. And the point being, obviously, the game has changed a lot. I'm just thinking a cold January night in Manchester, and you're playing with no gloves. There must have been times when your hands were literally freezing. You know, I've had it in games myself where they get to the point where they are numb and you can barely feel your fingers, and trying to make a save when your hands are like that. How did you deal with that?
I think you, Richard, you just got on with it. It's all about mental things, really, that you don't even think about it. You're rubbing your hands, you're keeping your hands warm. Just don't forget, if you've got gloves on, you're not going to feel your hands, are you? Mm. You know, with your hands being bare, that's the best thing, because you're keeping them warm and the blood from is coming out. And because don't forget the emotion that you're playing in the game and how you're feeling, and you know, it's all about, well, you're more interested in the game and what's happening around, what you've got to do. So I never felt that was a problem.
You mentioned there about catching, when goalkeepers used to catch the ball, Alex. I feel like there's something in that. So we're going to just elaborate on that, I think, because we recently had Mark Crosley, the ex-Nottingham Forest goalkeeper, on the podcast, yeah. And he spoke of Brian Clough and the fact that he worked under him and harking back to the days of just keep the ball out of the net. Now, we romanticise about it a lot, I think, about goalkeepers back in the day, but how simplistic was it for you when you were a goalkeeper?
Simplicity of it was basically it's what you told your defenders to do and what you wanted, and they had to adhere to what you wanted. I didn't have to really care in my day about what the manager would say, because there's no manager, even when I was goalkeeper coach, there's no manager who's going to say that they know what it is like to be a goalkeeper. It's all about, you know, getting what you want, how you want to defend. And one thing about it, you don't want the ball in your box. You don't want it in the 18 yard. You want it in the other 18 yard box.
Do you know what? And you touch on that, and it kind of goes, I guess it goes into the realm of goalkeeping intelligence, like playing the game in such a way where you're minimizing what you have to do, good communication, good organization, and reducing your workload effectively, which I think there's certain goalkeepers you can sense really have a good idea of that. I guess the bit I really want to go into, you know, certainly back then when you were playing, and you mentioned the fact that you'd run out just before kickoff. So, you know, whether it's warm-ups, whether it's training, did you have a goalkeeper coach? Did you do a lot of goalkeeping work? What kind of training? Nothing.
There's no goalkeeper coach. What was a goalkeeper coach? When I actually finished at Old Trafford in 79, Harry Gregg came in because Gary Bailey had basically taken over from me. And he brought in Harry Gregg, and that was virtually, I think, the start of goalkeeping coaches at 79.
Really?
And then it took on later on. I mean, I think Harry was probably the only one at the time. Because don't forget, he was a great ex-goalkeeper. You know, we knew that. Everything I learned, I taught myself. Really? And I done myself, and I wanted players around me to do what I wanted. Let's get it right. Every goalkeeper makes mistakes. Every player makes mistakes. That's happened. You've got to be consistent in not making mistakes. Mm. And certain things, you know, just, you know, as well as I did, Richard, you know, from a corner. I mean, I don't know how you were taught or whatever, because did you have goalkeeper coach?
Do you know what? I was lucky. I had Alec Chamberlain, Kevin Hitchcock were probably my two main goalkeeper coaches. I didn't until I was about 14, 15, which even now would be unusual. But no, I'm fascinated. So it was all based on instinct for you, right?
Yeah, I taught myself.
Wow.
I taught myself. When you played the game when I played it, I mean, I was brought up at Millwall, you know, back in the old third and fourth division. You know, back in the early 60s, and that was my apprenticeship, basically. And you had to look after yourself, and the only way to look after yourself was, you know, not only did you go for the ball, but you had to make sure that you sort of at the time of a ball's around the box, basically, in around the 6 yard box, and it breaks, and you have to go and dive. At dive for the ball with your hands, which you don't often see today, dive down at a player's feet. But at the same time, you have to let them know you're there. Because the more you keep going at your forwards, they won't come looking at you again. They'll back off. Yeah. But if you give them the option that you're scared, they'll keep coming at you.
The thing I find fascinating about this is, you know, often when we talk to younger goalkeepers now, we give advice as to how they can improve. You'd say, look, go and watch the best goalkeepers in the world, learn off that, get the best goalkeeper coach that you possibly can, you know, get outside, do as much work as you can. Where would you have found, or where would you have like honed your techniques? Was it still from watching other good goalkeepers and kind of copying what they do? Because I'm guessing a lot of it would have just developed, right? You're saying if you didn't have a coach or someone to guide you, I'm guessing a lot of it would have just been instinct, would have just came naturally.
Yeah, it did. But obviously I watched I mean, we didn't have the TV or anything like that we had that you've got today and things like that. But no, I used to go and watch. I wanted to go and watch professional football. I used to go and watch Chelsea. I wasn't a Chelsea supporter, but I knew that I could get there every Saturday afternoon and watch the best goalkeepers in the country. And when I used to go and watch the games, I mean, I didn't watch the outfield players. I was more interested to see what both goalkeepers were doing. And I picked up from that. And you'll find that, there wasn't a lot of change in the way goalkeepers reacted in those days. They'd done exactly, I did exactly what they were doing. Letting players know that, you know, I was there they're going to be against me. You know, they know that something's going to happen, that I'm going to be there when that ball breaks. I'm going to go down and I'm going to get that ball or come out and get across and make sure my knee's up. You know, there was times when you learn from experience. You have players who you play with were a lot older and have gone through the mill, especially when I was at Millwall, you know, and tell you, now watch this player, you know, watch out for this, but he will have you if he gets half the chance. And that happened. But then I learned from that. I made sure it didn't happen again. So I got them.
So did you then, Alex? Is that something that you had to work on more? Did you have to work more on the physical side of your game? I mean, did you lift weights? Did you work on trying to make yourself bigger and more imposing?
No. Listen, even today, I watch goalkeepers today. They're all trained. They're all trained for reflex. You make saves. Richard will tell you. You tell me, Richard. Yeah, you know, I bet you've made saves. You don't know how you've done it.
Yeah.
It's only because that's your day in, day out training. That you're a goalkeeper. You're trying to keep the ball out there. You're making saves. That's normal thing. It's the other side of goalkeeping that makes you a better goalkeeper. It's the other side of making sure that everything around you is happening what you want to happen and where you want players.
Yeah.
Not by the book.
Do you know what? The problem with that, because I agree fully, and the problem with that is that that's not seen. So you won't get like a pundit complimenting a goalkeeper on some great organisation. Do you know the two bits of goalkeeping for me, when I look at goalkeeping from, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, and I look at goalkeeping now, like now you've got these, I mean, they're athletes. You look at them, the way in which they move and whatever else. There's two bits. One is the bravery side of things. And without wanting to dig anyone out, as a good example, the final goal in the Man United game the other day.
Against Leipzig,
where David De Gea has kind of gone in. Normally, that's one where you're just desperate for your keeper to throw themselves in, head first, make the save. Whereas now, goalkeepers tend to come out and kind of do this long barrier, go with their feet. Nowhere near as effective. I mean, that's one thing that I've seen change. The other is the understanding, I feel, of the game, where because it's not necessarily commented on, or a pundit might not necessarily see the communication and the understanding that a goalkeeper has as to how best keep a clean sheet, how best keep the ball from the net. And you've just touched on a few things there, which is a lot of the focus, it sounds like, that you had is actually just being effective. You know, however you did it, forget about looking pretty at times, just being a really effective goalkeeper.
Yeah, you picked up on a point there, you picked up on David De Gea. I mean, there's certain times, you know, but that's the way the game's gone. I mean, even one against one, goalkeeping to me was I had to be forward. Goalkeepers today are not; they're laying back. They're trying to stop balls with their feet, right? And they're tackling. In around their 6-yard box with their feet. Now, come on, I mean, Pickford, they've all done it. I mean, I don't watch every game. But when I see these goals against, I can't believe, why don't you die? Why didn't you go down there, get the ball, get your hands? Surely, if you touch the ball first, you're not going to give a penalty away. You know, if you go with your feet, you're only going with half your body. If you're going head first with your arms outstretched, you've got a full length of body, haven't you? Right. So it's all about timing as well. I don't think they're trained that way. Right. I don't think they're trained. Do you know, I mean, the last goal, I mean, obviously I watched Manchester United because I work there, hospitality when I can now. But going back, I think the last goalkeeper that I could say at Manchester United used to go down head first, diving, was Edwin van der Sar, who was basically, you know, he's coming to the end of his career when he with that. He was doing it because that was a natural thing to him. And I've only seen, and I'll be very, very honest here, I mean, and I can only see what I've seen on television, but if you can look back and just have a look, Watford against Liverpool, I think it was a couple of seasons ago, Ben Foster went in four times for a ball. He went down head first looking, and eventually he came out with it. The ball went from one place to another. He went there, but he went up, he was up and down and diving at feet and got the ball. I've never seen that again since.
Fascinating. I agree.
So do you, Alex, as well? I mean, and this is a subject that often gets brought up with regards to modern football compared to football back in your day. Did goalkeepers have a higher pain threshold? I know that there's one story. Did you dislocate your jaw shouting at your teammates or something along those lines?
Yeah. There was but that was an after effect. I mean, it was against Birmingham at Birmingham. First minute, they got a free kick, kind of way out on the left, on my right. Sorry, and you know, the ball was up in the air, coming into that, you know, the penalty spot, 6 yard box. You know, you've got to go. You know that, you know, something's going to happen. You've got to go. You might get clobbered. And I did. A guy called Bob Hatton, just absolutely. He'll say he went to head the ball. But he didn't connect, and he just connected with my jaw and knocked me out. You know, because next thing you know is Tommy Kavanagh, who was a trainer under Tommy Docherty, came on, but it's the old cold sponge thing, and you come round and now are you, blah, blah, blah. But you're adrenaline, yeah, fine, okay, you play on. Because, you know, there was no goalkeeper subs in those days, you know. You play on and your adrenaline's there, because directly half-time came, and it was 0-0 at half-time. We go in and you relax and you have a cup of tea. Well, that was it, because then my jaw started to swell up a bit because I went out for the second half and a ball was early on came to me and I shouted to Martin Buchan. Well, I tried to shout to Martin Buchan that I was going to give him the ball, which, you know, and then it just went crack. And that was it. Then you finish up in hospital. Brian Greenough came on, he went in goal and we won 2-0. So he was probably a better goalkeeper than me.
Incredible, though, to think that you actually played on with a broken jaw. I mean, it wouldn't happen now, of course, would it? But then, I guess...
No, look. That's the way the world is. I just mentioned early on to you about when I was playing for Millwall, you know, I mean, we played up at Barrow. I don't know if you've heard this story, but we played up at Barrow. Where you can imagine, we left on Friday morning about 9 o'clock from Euston or St Pancras, wherever it was, and eventually via Crewe and into Barrow and get there at 5 o'clock in the evening and you're playing Barrow away. The older players in the team said, look, you watch out for this fella, he'll have you. He got me. He absolutely got me. I'll tell you what, he got me. And I, half-time, I went for a wee and wee in blood and, you know, the air club doctor came in and said, oh, yeah, you've done your kidneys, and, you know. No subs, played on. We actually won 5-0, would you believe? But the fact is that coming back, can you imagine how I felt? And then you come back to Crewe on the train straight after the game and then a sleeper from Crewe back to London. And, you know, I still played the next week.
Wow.
But that's your own mentality, isn't it? That's what it's all about. Being a goalkeeper in those days was you have to. It's your life. It's. I mean, you're earning peanuts. Well, I say peanuts, you're a lot better off than probably, you know, anybody else doing a normal job. But no, you wanted to play the game and you wanted to just carry on. And you trained and you got through it. Simple as that. I mean, you break your fingers or you do your knuckles and everything like that. You just strap them up and go with it.
So for me, you don't really hear these stories now. And one of the questions I did want to ask, I'm really keen to ask, is how you see not just football, but goalkeeping now. You've touched on one or two bits and obviously it's changed a heck of a lot and, you know, various different things. I mean, it's fair to say you were quite ahead of your time in terms of how you played the game. And, you know, we see goalkeepers now with incredible distribution, the likes of Edison in particular. You know, you're watching
absolutely.
Him play. It's fantastic.
Absolutely.
So in terms of how you view goalkeeping now, the pros and cons?
Well, to me, the game's changed so much, everything moves on, you know. I mean, you can say about the ball's different, yeah, okay, yeah, but you're training with it every day. That's my opinion. That's how I was. When, you know, people say, well, what was it like with that heavy ball? You know, you work with it every day. But what annoys me is why now I saw, and it's happened so many times before, I mean, the goal that Dean Henderson gave away at Sheffield United the other night, in the first 2 or 3 minutes, whatever it was. Yes. I mean, Lindelof is a free kick outside the box. Now, Lindelof gives him the ball. Now, don't forget, in my day, I could pick the ball up, okay? So that would be fine because you're safe. That's how I think. You're safe. Now, I don't care what players can... A goalkeeper is a goalkeeper, and he's got to be around that 18-yard box. That's his domain. But for Lindelof to give the ball to Dean Henderson, right? And what does Dean Henderson do? He passes it, I think, to Maguire. No one around him, and Maguire passes it back to him. Now, I tell you what, if that had been me, I'd have got hold of Maguire after the game, and I'd have chinned him. You don't do that. When I give you the ball, I want the ball up there. Why give it to me to do when you could have done it? Mm-hmm. Now, that's the disruption in the game today. The biggest fault in professional football today, in goalkeeping terms. Why do you want to mess around with a ball in your 18-yard box and keep passing it back to your goalkeeper? My day wasn't so bad. I could pick it up. But so- today, you make a mistake... and pressurised like he was. And he's not the only one. They've all done it. Every goalkeeper's done it. You've seen it time and time again in the last 5 or 6 years.
Do you know what? It's funny you say this. We spoke about exactly this on... We do like a couple of podcasts each week on the latest developments. Okay. I mean, Ben Foster did the same thing in the game yesterday. Lost 2-0. Exactly the same as Dean Henderson. And do you know what? What I was saying was, if this happens 10 years ago, it's on like own goals and gaffes and it's shown 100 times. But now it's just become par for the course. It's just a case of, oh, it's another goalkeeper trying to play out, been caught. Now, people
it's
are
not
kind
his
of,
fault. It's
no,
not his
well,
fault.
This is it. People are kind of calling it like a fad at the moment, that this people will grow out of this phase and will go back to actually being safe. But I don't know. I hope it is. I hope it is just a fad and actually goalkeepers go back to keeping goal. Yeah, being fantastic.
You know why?
Go
on. Because the game, right, the game is run by the book. Hmm. You've got to do what the coach's manual says. You've got to do this. The goalkeeper that I feel very, very sorry for was Joe Hart. When Pep Guardiola came into Man City, he's a great manager, don't get me wrong. That Joe Hart was absolutely, he was England goalkeeper, it was everything, right? I tell you what, he never had a manager that played the way he wanted to play. Out from the back with his feet, okay? He never had a chance. How could he adjust in that split second of a time? And it ruined him. It ruined Joe.
Is it fair to say at the same time, Alex, that you... I mean, so Harry Gregg was the goalkeeper before you, of course. He'd essentially, I don't know, revolutionised goalkeeping by dominating his 18-yard box. You came in and almost became that 11th player for the first time. Is that fair to say? Because distribution, when you were playing, was still a big part of it. I mean, you were very quick on the throw, straight out to Tony Dunn or whoever it may have been.
Absolutely. That, but that was the thing, you see. That's how it was. I used to say to like Tony, I mean, I was there 12 years, but I mean, I had Tony Dunn, obviously Shay Brennan, John Fitzpatrick, you know, all these players in the 60s, Francis Burns, fullbacks, and then going into the 70s with Arthur Orbison and Stuart Houston and Jimmy Nicol and Alex Forsyth. They knew, after I told them, when I get that ball, you go. So if I come and collect the ball on the right side of my goal, okay, Arthur Orbison would be off. He'd be off down the left. Confidence. He knew when that ball was coming in, he had confidence in me that I was going to get it and he'd be off. And then it's gone. Same as Tony Dunn. And you saw that. You saw that in the European Cup final after I made the save from Eusebio. Tony Dunn was running back. He's gone. He's made space for himself and we're on the attack again. That to me is goalkeeping. You don't see that today. Goalkeepers don't say to their players what they want.
Why do you think that is?
Because the way the game's evolved, the people that are in the game, the coaches way back from you, they're taught that way, or they've got to be nice. You can't. They haven't got the confidence. They've got to do what the manager says. What do you think, Richard?
I fully agree. It's one of the reasons we actually set up this podcast. We're 120 odd in now, and it's incredible. So I think you're right. I think then it's effectively its own department, and that's why I think goalkeeper coaches. It's starting to happen at one or two clubs where they become the head of a department, and effectively goalkeepers then in theory would then report to them, and it should become. And I guess where we try and we do our weekly show where we'll try and go into details because the parts of goalkeeping that might be missed, where it might be those intricate details that you and I might see, but nobody else sees, because it's where a goalkeeper reading the game incredibly well might stop a wave of attacks, yet that'll barely get mentioned by a pundit. And I think you're right. I think a lot of the things that make a really effective goalkeeper, some of the best, some of the goalkeepers you'd have seen closely as well that were brilliant communicators, I'm guessing... You sometimes now will see the type of goalkeeper who is, beautiful to watch in terms of athletic, makes lovely looking saves, but isn't necessarily as effective because they don't know the position.
Now is what I've been saying, They're trained for reflexes, diving here and there and making saves. But they're not brave. They don't organise enough. And they don't frighten the defenders, their own defenders, to what they want. And if the manager wants you to play out the box, if the manager said to me, pass it to Maguire, right? I'm only picking him as an instance. Pass it to Maguire, right? And he can pass it back to you. Oh, that's it, on your bike. On your bike. I want that ball up that end. I want the ball in their box. Let them worry about it. Not in my box. Because anybody can make a mistake.
You said as well, Alex, about warm-ups, that you never really had a warm-up. So now, obviously, players, teams, they go out on the pitch about an hour before a game and they get used to the ball, et cetera, et cetera. You didn't do that. You went out, 5 minutes before kickoff?
Yeah, 5 minutes. The bell always went in 5 minutes before the game. And what you used to do, all you could do was basically get yourself ready in the dressing room. And don't forget, in those days, the dressing rooms weren't that big. And there probably would be, I don't know, three footballs in the dressing room. Not brand new ones, by the way. Used ones, but it was the reserve team had been using or something like that. I'd have to go into the shower area or where the bath was, and normally every wall was tiled, and I would bounce the ball, get my hands around the ball, and throw it against the tiles, catch it, do it in there, and then when the bell went, out you go.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And then when you went out, and while the captains were tossing up to for the game, you'd have your centre forward just knock a few balls, because he'd take a ball out with him, or I'd take a ball out, and that was it. They'd just knock a few balls to you in that space of five, it all happens in 5 minutes.
It's incredible. Incredible to think how much it's changed since then.
So pre-match meals as well. I mean, that's another thing that's changed. I mean, I mentioned the spag bowl at the top. I know that's something that came in later in your career, but back in the day, big jacket potatoes, steak and chips, chicken and chips. I mean, I always wonder... I guess you were used to it, so it wasn't such a big deal back then, but surely that sat on your stomach before a game?
No, because any dietitian will tell you it takes 3 hours for it to sort of get into your stomach. That was it. So if you're playing at 3 o'clock, you'd eat at 12. Simple as that. But it's something that, you sort of go through, isn't it? It's something that's, you do every day, every match day. It didn't affect you, because I would have thought your body had acclimatised to it. Simple as that. It never went in a way. You never felt in a way that was going to deter you from the way you were going to play and who you were playing against, and who I knew I was going to be playing against, and what sort of player was he, and I'd have to do this and do that. I'd be thinking of that. I wouldn't be worried about what I'd eaten.
Can I ask you as well, you said when you went up to Barrow that time, so you went up from London, big old journey, you went to Barrow, you had to stop off at Crewe on the way home, there was a sleeper train all the way back to London. Those long away journeys, right? Today, everybody has a phone, everybody has a laptop or an iPad, whatever they do. You see players just keyed into their headphones, not really talking to each other as much as I guess they could do. They have entertainment, they have all sorts of stuff. Back then, it was so limited as to what you could do. I guess you had a paper, you might have had a few board games, maybe some cards. But what did you do on those long journeys? Because they were long journeys. Is there a case to say back then there was a better camaraderie because you actually talked more?
Yeah, but you were in that squad. I mean, don't forget that the squad was only like 14, probably. You know, if you're going away on a long trip, even when at match night when I was at Millwall, you know, you wouldn't have more than like 13 players. You'd always have a young apprentice who basically was learning the ropes, and it was great for him to be part to look after the kit, you know, when it was put out, that sort of thing. But you had characters. You had something that, no matter what club you were at, there was always something somewhere there. Like, obviously, being at Manchester United, I mean, the basic thing was we used to play crib, you know, which is a card game. And on a long journey, there'd be a competition. I mean, everyone knew who they was pairing off with. Really. Normally your roommate, you know what I mean? Pairs and Matt Busby and Jimmy Murphy would come and play, and that's what it was all about. You know, it was just great fun, just great fun. And like you say, there was a lot of more camaraderie, you know, between us in those days than now. Like you say, we're players with earphones and mobile phones and this, that, and the other. I don't think there's that there's that feeling between players today. And not only that, don't forget, we were all British. Well, Southern Ireland era players as well. But today, different way of life, isn't it? You've got so many foreign players that I think that's probably been a big restriction in the way that players get together.
Alex, it's been really, really good having you on. I mean, we've barely scratched the surface of your career. I think we might have to go for a part two where we talk about Millwall, we talk about Tooting, we talk about United, European Cup, Eusebio, Dallas, all of that stuff. That will be for another day. So I guess just to finish before Rich comes to his final question, we talk a lot about psychology on this podcast and the psychology of a goalkeeper. Just to quickly touch on your career with this one question, I said at the top there that you rose from, you know, non-league at Tooting and Mitcham all the way to the European Cup final in the space of around 5 years. It was the fame of being a Manchester United goalkeeper. I think when Harry Gregg signed for United, he almost described it as the Hollywood of football. What was that like for you going into Manchester United and having such a huge rise to becoming, you know, a big superstar in Manchester and England? What was that like? How did you deal with that in terms of your mindset? And was it different back then? Did everybody just take everything on the chin and you got on with it? Because the pressures, perhaps, of being a goalkeeper nowadays weren't as prevalent back then.
Well, it's never really worried me. I only thought about the way, I was going to, I wouldn't change the way I played. My main way of playing was distribution. Obviously different to what it is today because, I mean, okay, yes, I could kick the ball out of my hands. I found a better way as the sort of longer you go in the game, you know how to distribute the ball better if you want to hit your centre forward or whatever up front. You don't want it to go too high. You want to him to control the ball. But throwing the ball out, keeping the ball, the higher you go in the game, like I did so quickly, I found it a hell of a lot quicker, massively quicker, but I was playing with better players. And when you play with better players, it becomes quicker and it becomes more easier. My main concern was, like I said, you know, my first game for Manchester United. I mean, don't forget, I was at Chelsea for 4 months. I had a world record fee over my head for that, but that didn't really help the matter because certain things happened at Chelsea. I played the one game on the Saturday and then on the Monday morning, you know, Matt Busby came and signed me for another world record fee. And my first game was Man City at home, a derby game, you know. But I just got on with it. I done what I had done all my career, even playing at Millwall. I went out there to control. I mean, I spoke to your players. I mean, can you imagine me saying to Nobby Snows, I want you to do that. And I want you on the, which I don't see today. I mean, I always had two defenders on the line for a corner. Because if I went, I knew there was someone behind and something happened. But they had confidence in me anyway. But you don't see that today. My mind was, I don't want anything around me. I want to make sure we win and we go forward and attack the other team. That was it. When I was goalkeeping coaching at Man City, and I finished at Burnley, I used to get, and this to me sums up about goalkeeping today, which you've been trying to express and find out the difference and things, you know, the way what we see with goalkeepers today, how they perform to when I played and back then. I used to get a magazine, the FA coaching magazine, every month, and I was told then, I was told by, I had to adhere by what the FA said, the goalkeeping guru of the FA at the time, that when you teach kids, you tell them where to stand defensively, where they should stand for a free kick or a corner.
What did you find that sort of has happened over time then? Is it more a case
That's it.
It's not thinking of themselves effectively.
A goalkeeper today is told what to do. Mm. A goalkeeper, in my day, I was never told what to do. I'd done what I wanted to do.
Do you know what I'd liken it to is, I suppose when you're thinking of a child, and you know, naturally a parent of a child is going to want to protect them at every possible, but the problem is, of course, for a child to fully grow up, you need to make mistakes. You need to kind of learn a lot of these things yourselves and understand it. Whereas if you're just being told what to do, where to be, and you don't really know the reason why, then you are effectively creating, well, robots, but they're not going to be effective enough. I guess that's the point, isn't it? Is that you were doing a lot based on intuition. You were figuring out what was working and what wasn't working.
I use my brain. But that is simple, isn't it? I mean, if like, okay, let's get it in respect. Who was the most dangerous person I had to face at a corner, right? Mm. I would have said Jack Charlton, because you remember Jack Charlton, I don't know if you remember this, but Jack Charlton, 6'5", whatever, would come up and stand next to the goalkeeper. Never been seen before, is it?
Yeah.
It had never been seen before. There's always plans by managers to create chances to change things, right? Now, he would come and stand next to me and try and block me. Now, what do you do? I know what I did straight away. I said to my defenders, I don't want anybody near me. I don't want any of my defenders near me or him. Leave him to me. Well, for the simple reason that if he blocks me, I'll get a free kick, right? But players, I can't believe that a goalkeeper can stand there today and a player comes up the stand, a defender goes in between the goalkeeper and the attacker. You're never going to get a free kick.
It is fascinating because actually you see goalkeepers now and the amount... And by the way, I had this at times as well, where you have so many people around you, you end up getting pinned in and corners will come 3-4 yards from you and they're getting headed in. You know, there was a good example in the second one for Dean Henderson the other day where the header's from 3 yards
absolutely.
Out. And he's been, and it's because there's so many people around, he can't maneuver to get there. But as you say, if he could just create some space, he's either going to get the foul or he's going to get enough space to be able to come and affect the ball. And of course, when it
and
is
the
three
player.
And the player, well, look, you know, Alex, been as Matt said, it's been really fascinating talking to you. We always finish with the same question, and I've got a feeling a part two may well be on the way at some point. I'd love to go into a bit more detail because I feel that to hear this, just to give a slightly different perspective on what maybe they've heard before, you know, it's been really, really insightful. But the final question that we always ask every guest that we have on this show is, Alex Stepney, what has goalkeeping given you?
It's given me a very good life. It's given me a chance to prove in my own ability, really, like everything else. I've, there's low times and there's the high times, and you've got to face up to it. But you've always got to keep going and going and going until your body runs out. Your body tells you. But no, I've thoroughly enjoyed my career as a professional footballer. I didn't think I was ever going to be one. I didn't sign until I was 20 professionally. And everything happened very quickly. So I must have been doing something right. And I've enjoyed life. And, well, let's be honest. I mean, I played for the biggest club in the world, as far as I'm concerned. I've won everything. I think the only thing I didn't win was the League Cup. But in saying that, you know, I've travelled the world and I've got so many great friends all around the world, you know. And it's just been a fantastic time for me. I'm 78 now and still enjoying life. And long may it continue.
Alex Stepney, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Somerby, good shot! Mike Somerby, a magnificent shot, but you will go a long, long way before you'll see a better save than that from Stepney. Stepney there outside his far post, having really produced the save of the match and one of the saves of the season.
Alex Stepney there, Richard. He did not disappoint.
No, he certainly didn't. No, I really enjoyed that interview. You know, we touched on it beforehand. The fact that he was as frank in a lot of the opinions that he gave, he certainly pulled no punches, did he? And it was obviously a very, very different era. I loved hearing some of the stories, some of the experiences, of course, back then, which just seems so alien to us now, knowing how players prepare for games and how goalkeepers prepare, and in terms of the techniques used now by goalkeepers opposed to what they were back then. But you could argue, you know, certainly when it comes to handling, and I know this gets said a lot by commentators about goalkeepers catching the ball, but of course it was a very, very different game back then, and I know he alluded to that, but how even the point about how in terms of not having gloves, so just putting mud on his hands in order to catch, just such a different game. But fascinating to hear about it.
Yeah, so different. And I did use the word angst at the beginning. I didn't mean it in that way. It's quite interesting when you speak to older goalkeepers. Peter Shilton is a lot like that as well. I think when you hear Peter Shilton speak, it's very much a case of, well, in my day, I tell you what, you wouldn't have survived in my day. Alex Stepney, I think, delivered it really well. And you said about pulling no punches. He didn't punch at all in his day. It was all about catching, like he said. You know, when goalkeepers used to catch the ball, and the no warm-up is amazing, really. Yeah. They used to go out, 5 minutes before a game? So he would be in the changing room just throwing a ball up against the wall.
It's crazy to think. It is crazy to think. And I keep going back to what you know that goalkeepers experience now and the amount of preparation. Obviously, the warm-up's key for every goalkeeper that now plays. So to actually have the mentality, the mindset to be able to step out in the way that he did in massive games, by the way. You know, you see some of the footage and huge crowds at every game. And of course, often the crowds are even bigger than they are now, given that a lot of it would have been standing, etc. Just incredible. You know, fantastic story and a thoroughly enjoyable interview.
Yeah, really good. And like we said, we've got plenty more to come with Alex Stepney. We are going to go through his career. I know he's done that a few times on other podcasts, but again, we are going to focus specifically on that goalkeeping aspect of it. And lastly, just the way he said he would have dealt with modern footballers as well. He was quite frank about it. Was that game, wasn't it, involving United, Manchester United and Sheffield United recently, where Dean Henderson made that mistake right at the beginning. But he said, no, that wasn't Dean Henderson. That was Harry Maguire. If Harry Maguire had given me that ball, I would have given him all sorts of abuse.
Yeah, absolutely. No, fantastic interview. Certainly one of my favourites so far. And I'm looking forward to the next instalment.
Richard, thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Keepers
away.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.